What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast. Again, I am Derek Wilson, and this is episode number 13, number 13. Man, we're flying right through these. So today, I am super excited to be able to have the guest on. He is someone who's running a multi-million dollar business. He's flying around the country. He's a part of a lot of different veterans organizations and charitable causes. He has a ton of things on his plate, and the fact that he was able to dedicate an hour to me, to you as the audience, again, just super, super grateful. He dropped some really, really good nuggets on his upbringing, how it impacted his life, some of the ways that he handles the stress and the pressures of, you know, being a former Green Beret and everything else that he is doing now. So again, I hope you all enjoy this, and let's get to it. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, what is up, everybody? So we are back. I appreciate you all joining us. And today I have a super awesome guest. So excited to be able to talk with him. He is a former Green Beret. He's been featured in places such as Forbes, Valor Magazine, Fox Business Channel, and countless others. Served multiple tours overseas, including the invasion of Iraq, as well as being deployed for around 300 days per year for a decade. After all of that, he went on to be the founder and the CEO of Black Rifle Coffee Company, and has experienced massive success within that business. Let me introduce you all to my next guest, Mr. Evan Hafer. How you doing?
Oh, shoot, that's me. Wow, okay.
Yeah. Was that all right? That's all right, right?
Yeah, that was all right. I think it just sounds more impressive than it probably was, but it reads well on paper, I guess.
Reads well on paper. That's awesome.
So yeah, it's more of a Forrest Gump situation, I think. I just found myself in the right place at the right time.
And that kind of leads me into, I guess, where I'd like to start, because we're just talking, and for those of you out there that don't know, and if you've been listening to the podcast, I guess you do know, I live in a tiny town, like 400 people, and we started talking, and it's like, well, you grew up in a small town as well, like 2 hours north of me here in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So, and then I was kind of doing some research as well, and it looks like you grew up probably very similar to me, hardworking family. And it sounds like there wasn't a lot of vacations, probably didn't make a ton of money, but you learned work ethic. I guess if you wouldn't mind, Evan, would you just kind of give me like a little bit of a background of what your upbringing was like there?
Yeah. Vacation wasn't really a word that we even knew. Vacation was for rich people. And my dad was a logger. And my grandfather was a logger. Both my grandfathers were loggers in Weipe, Idaho, which I'm sure you're familiar with, around Weipe headquarters area. So vacation wasn't a derogatory term. It wasn't anything. It was like, that's what rich people did. I grew up around my grandfather, my grandfathers, and my father, like my mom's father. He was the grave digger. He was the sheriff, the grave digger, the mayor, whatever. He did everything. He was a TV repair guy. He did every job in the town. And my father drove a truck, logging truck, and he was a heavy equipment operator. He had his own logging company. Like, he's just kind of a jack of all trades too. So my life was one of most of all the work that we conducted was always in the woods. I didn't know people worked at desks. I didn't know that was like a thing, actually, until much later in life. And it just, work was always part of life, right? It was just something where it was like eating or breathing or anything else. It wasn't like something different. And then manual labor was always what I identified with as work. It wasn't like, work wasn't working through spreadsheets. Work wasn't, you know, running through, you know, pro formas or something like that. Like, my cousin and I, he grew up in Weipe. two. He's actually got a PhD in genetics. I think it was later in life when we discovered, like, oh, people go into college and they do other things, you know. but he's also super accomplished. Like, he was a smoke jumper in Idaho for a long time. And, you know, I went and became a Green Beret. He went and became a smoke jumper. He's way smarter than I am, but both of us we like to say that we're fairly balanced on both sides of that equation.
So because you grew up that way, and we'll kind of get into some of the stuff later on, but I assume when you were growing up, it probably wasn't always a ton of fun learning that work ethic, right? Like, I know when I was growing up kind of on a ranch and you know, all the stuff that goes into that and just working all the time, you probably didn't realize as a kid, but like, how do you feel like that impacted you when you did get into, you know, when you got to be a Green Beret and running a business and stuff? Like, how much, I guess, can you kind of bring back and attribute to learning the work ethic at such a young age?
Well, I think I equate it to, it wasn't a ton of fun, you know, but it had a massive impact because I've talked about this a few times with a bunch of my buddies. I never saw my dad in a pair of shorts, for instance, until
me either.
I was like, swear to until God. I was like, yep. 30 years old.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's what you look like in shorts. Okay. That's cool. He wore white boots, which I'm sure you're familiar with those. They're made out of Spokane. He wore white boots. He wore 501 shrink to fits, and he wore flannel. And that's literally what I saw my dad wear. I mean, that's the way he dressed for every occasion. It didn't matter where he was going. He might wear, you know, a pearl snap button up shirt and then basically the same bottom if he was going somewhere nice. Right. And that was like, typically we're going to the restaurant or we're going somewhere else. So I think the way that it impacted me in ways that I would never really know, it's so ingrained into my subconscious that, you know, I've talked about it in the context of, you know, if you grew up working in a rice field and in, you know, China, and that's what your father did, that's what your grandfather did, that's what your great-grandfather did, you just expect to work 18-hour days, and that's what you expect to do. It wasn't until later in life where I was exposed to multiple different, male figures, where my world started to kind of open up, and it was different. Like, I didn't have to be a logger, you know, I could go off and do something else. I didn't have to work at the mill, didn't have to be a logger, didn't have to do one of those jobs. So when I discovered that, it kind of opened up everything, right? Like, so then it's like, oh, everything's on the table. Yeah. Now that everything's on the table, well, what do I want to do? Because after looking at, you know, a regular weekend for my family was like the stuff that normal people would say was impossible, you know, like it was like impossible. Like, you know, if you're going to drive a truck into the middle of the mountains on some of the worst roads and known to man and, you know, harvest an animal and then quarter it and pack it out, that's like normal. That's just normal behavior. That's just like a weekend, you know, or go out to work with my dad. And, you know, they're hooking logs and driving up the side of a mountain and they're doing, these are the things they do. This is just normal behavior. So, I just knew, given my dad in his circumstance, like, I never saw my dad inebriated. I've never seen him like belligerent. I've never seen him like, you know, anything other than like, he's up at 4 a.m. He drinks about a pot or he fills his thermos up with a pot of coffee. He's out until it gets dark and then maybe past dark. And that's just the way that I grew up. That's what I knew people around me did. And so I just applied in my mind early on. I was like, well, if there are no boundaries to the context of work and you can now emphasize your intellect against your physicality, right? Well, why can't you just do whatever the hell you want to do and just go be exactly who you want to be? I didn't even think twice about whether or not I could do it. It was just like, oh, I'll go do that.
just another day, right? I mean,
another day. I'll go do that. yeah, I'll go do that. Now, once I realized there was actually a, you know, selection process, then I was like, well, this obviously is going to take a lot of work. I'm not afraid of the work. And, you know, I've seen my dad do things harder on his own than what guys do in special forces assessment and selection. And that's not me hitting on special forces assessment and selection, but when you see your grandfather and your father do things that are physically harder and more dangerous than what is required, you kind of have that DNA where you're like, oh, I'll put on it. Like, you know, maybe put on a bunch of weight and, you know, pack stuff around in the woods at night with a map and compass. Dude, that's my weekend. So like, what are we doing different? You know, like, okay, I got to lead some guys. Like, all right, great.
I'm used to throwing a quarter on and not having a flashlight and like trying to wander around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get it. Like, or, you know, you get up somewhere and, you know, your truck breaks down. Well, back then you didn't have like a sat text or, you know, that was like, you're walking, you're walking, you're putting what you have on your back and you're walking to a place and you got to know where you're at all the time. So like the rules of being Green Beret were like, always know where you are. Always look cool. And if you don't know where you are, look cool. And, you know, I grew up with a map. I grew up with a 1/24,000 USGS map. I knew how to start a fire with flint and steel, like really early. Like I'd always been attracted. I lived in the woods, you know, like I would go to work with my dad, go to work with grandpa. We would, if we did recreate, it was never vacation, right? It was like, we're going hunting, we're going fishing. Or we used to do these things called black powder rendezvous. So we'd go out and shoot black powder with a bunch of other guys out in the middle of the mountains, right? So I think it's so deeply ingrained in my DNA. I don't know anything else, you know. Yeah. I have to work. It's like eating or, you know, drinking coffee, or I have to do those things. So I don't know anything different.
Well, how do you, because it's what's fascinating to me now is growing up in a small town and then, you know, going out and learning about the world and everything else and then kind of coming back, is I've noticed now that like when I grew up, it was very similar to you, to where my dad worked his ass off, right? He absolutely worked his ass off. But I also got to go with him when I was young and see right. that. And I got to hang out with my dad. And now what I've noticed is that so many people still work their ass off, but a lot of times it's dad going to an office, you know, grinding at the office for 18 hours while kids are at home with mom or with daycare or whatever. And not seeing that, like, you know, so something that's always kind of been fascinating to me, got your daughter with you.
Exactly. Right. That's what we're talking about. So,
Yep. Absolutely. And like, yeah, I mean, the fact that you're able to have your kids with you, to me, is so important, because again, like I actually went through and one of the big reasons why I started the podcast was, you know, and I've talked to you a little bit about before, it was like the liberation side of it, because I've gone to the office and I've grinded 6-7 days a week, you know, 80 hours a week to try to make the money. Then all of a sudden you start having kids and you're like, what for? Like, what's the point of having all this money? I'm not around my kids to actually teach them what it means to be a man or what it means to, you know, to be able to have your dad around. And so even though like you weren't going on vacations, I look at it to where it's like, would you rather never go on a vacation? Cause I never did either. Like I had friends that would like fly off to Florida or, you know, would go to Disneyland. And I'm like, what is Disneyland? Like all of that stuff. But at the same time, like I got to see my dad and be around my dad and learn the work ethic. And so I look back and I'm like, okay, would I rather have 3 days a year where I get 100% undivided attention from my parents, or like actually be able to be around my dad and learn how to be a man, learn how to work? Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's very similar. You know, Brundage is a ski hill that's really close to both you and I, right?
Yep.
And I had friends that were like going to Brundage, and I was like, I always looked at that as just kind of like, that's just kind of stupid. You know, like you guys are going skiing. Like I didn't really even get into that side of things. Recreation wise, like I didn't really even know how to necessarily even enjoy myself until later in life. And you know, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? My dad worked a lot and he was gone a lot. So you know, I think now when I balance those things, I look at it as you have to spend time and you have to build in that template. They have to see you work. They have to see what work is like. That's one of the reasons why I built the company, because I was having children, and every company that I've been involved in, I looked at it as my post-employment consequence to my family, and which is I didn't ever want a job. Like, I carried a gun and it was a very individual activity for a long period of time, and it required me being out of the country in order to pay my mortgage. And those were individual and fun endeavors. And when I say they were fun, they're patriotic, which I do feel a substantial amount of ethical responsibility to serving the country. It was definitely my pleasure. But after a certain point, it just becomes more of a selfish endeavor. You know, I could choose whether or not I was going to deploy or not, whether or not I was going to keep doing those things. And when I had kids, I actually bought a company in Idaho, into a company in Idaho that does Middle Fork of the Salmon trips. So we do 12 trips a year on the Middle Fork. And the reason I bought that company was because what I wanted is to be able to share time with my family in a place where I would be working and where they would have to work, right? And there would be no electronic distractions. And, you know, the Middle Fork, it's the most remote wilderness in the lower 48. You know, the Frank Church Wilderness area is like a super special place.
They just came out with a show about it. Did you see that?
Huh?
Yeah. No. It's called The River of No Return. It's on Discovery Channel.
Oh, I'll have to watch that. That's amazing. But I bought into the company knowing this is for me and my family to share time in a way that they could interact. Like, I can't hook logs at 12 years old. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be running a skidder and driving a semi truck. If I did, that would be like really, really unsafe and probably not cool for my dad to put me in that situation. So, my thought was, I need to work. It's part of my DNA. How do I work and then share time with my family? So, like this morning, I took my daughter to school, my older daughter, and then my younger daughter came to work with me. And, you know, I made coffee, I made her some cocoa, I had a couple of meetings, she's running around at my feet, you know, and I'm jumping on this podcast and she's, you know, watching TV right next to me. And then later, you know, I'll be going out looking at different coffee shops in town, you know, going, walking through the square footage, you know, looking at different buildings to see which ones we're going to put Black Rifle in. But I get the whole day. You know what I mean? There's very few things professionally that I do now that I can't directly plug my kids into because I own the company as well. Right. So who's going to tell me no? And, you know, to be quite frank, that's why I did it, because I wanted the autonomy, or the, I needed to be able to emancipate myself from a profession where I worked for other people and they established the rules to where I established the rules and raise my kids and be with my family in a way that was more beneficial than the way that my father raised me, you know, which was like, he's out working, you know, I'm sitting in the truck. Right. Or he's working. I'll see him on Saturday. And that's not a hit against my dad. I love him. He's awesome. But he also didn't have the choice. Like, he worked hard to allow me to have the choice in order to build a profession like this. I've just been fortunate to keep my, you know, my life, limbs and eyesight so I can do this. You know what I mean?
Well, how was it? Because I think that when you grow up in a small town, like I did, like you did, like a lot of people that I know listen to the podcast, you grow up in a small town and there's kind of a certain way of doing things, right? It's like you get a job, you kind of grab your lunch pail. It's a lot of times it's physical, manual labor and stuff like that. So growing up the way that you did, and obviously like I have my own experiences as far as kind of like
with my mindset to get me, I guess, maybe outside of just that straight line paradigm. But like for you, how was the transition of going from like, okay, I'm probably going to grow up and be a logger. I'm probably going to go up and like use my hands, maybe not as much my brain, you know, I'm going to probably do hard physical labor every day. Like, what was the turning point to where you're like, you know, maybe I don't have to do what my dad did or what my grandpa did?
I met a guy when I was probably 13 or 14 in Lewiston. His name is Rob Proschel. He's a retired lieutenant colonel, special forces lieutenant colonel. And I was dating his daughter, right? You know, we were hanging out or whatever. And he started talking to me, and I was like, man, would you, he had like the coolest room I've ever seen in my life. I walked in there and it's like scuba tanks and plaques and books everywhere. And I started talking to him, and he was very instrumental in just opening that up, because the more time I spent around him, he's still a great friend of mine today. He was very instrumental in seeing like, wow, you can do other things in life than this that are still physically difficult, which requires, you know, the discipline of, you know, a labor industry professional and the intellect of an executive, right? Like that's like, those two things are so interesting to me. And at a very young age, I found it really interesting. It was paramount to my development. So he gave me a book on special forces really early. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was wanting to be a Green Beret, and then being a Green Beret, that opened up like all these other things, right? So then you start, you know, traveling the world and interfacing with all these other people, and then guys coming in from, you know, every walk of life, and they're hyper exceptional people. They're, you know, 1% in the exceptional category, right? So they come from all walks of life, you know, from not only, you know, the States, but some of these guys lived overseas and like, you know, multiple trips and all these different places. Then you start looking at different government agencies. And then, so kind of the culmination of all this was like meeting this one guy at a very young age, him turning me on to this other profession, then me understanding what I needed in order to accomplish that. And then really kind of what that did was that galvanized the confidence for me to go out and say, I'm not restricted in any way, shape, or form, right? There's zero restrictions on this. I don't have a governor. You know, the only governor in your life is literally you. Like, it's you. So you can go as fast or as slow as you want. And the only thing that restricts you is when you hit your wall, right? When you hit the wall, then that wall is like, I can't be a proficient astrophysicist. I know that. I don't have the intellect to do that. I don't. Do I find it really interesting? Yeah, I can find it interesting, but I don't have the intellect in order to do that, right? I can't be an Olympic lifter or, you know, a professional NFL lineman. Like, I'm 160 fucking pounds. So there are really, really definitive restrictions that you face where you're like, I can't do this. So even if I want to be, you know, play center for the fucking Dallas Cowboys, well, dude, if you weigh 160 pounds and you're 5'7", that ain't gonna happen. Like, yeah. You know, you might be able to do it for a certain amount of time at maybe the high school level and maybe get into like, you know, collegiate level, but if your dream is to become that in the Dallas Cowboys, like, you have to have a real hard check reality conversation with yourself. You have to eliminate some of those options and be realistic as far as your intellectual and physical capabilities, and then go, okay, but what really excites me, right? So what excites me, what will build me as an individual? You know, my time in the military as an infantryman and then as a Green Beret and then working for the CIA, that stuff is like very instrumental to who I am and how it opens you up to a wide spectrum of people and personalities and professions. And, you know, now you interface, like I interface with guys like, you know, Andy Stumpf and Jocko Willink and, you know, like John Dudley and, you know, Matt Best is like my best, you know, Matt Best, my best friend. Mm-hmm. But these are guys that are like, we're all kind of drifting in this circle of performance where all these guys are really exceptional human beings. So then you're like surrounding yourself with more exceptional human beings. And, you know, if you continue to drive yourself, and what I was thinking about this actually this morning in the shower, I really feel like I've gotten the most out of my, both my body and my mind, right? Which is like, I'm trying to wring the sponge out of everything I have. I'm not exceptionally gifted at anything other than like, how hard can I push this machine? And I'm running it at red. Whereas like a lot of guys, they have like more physical capability. They have more intellect. They have more this, but you know what they don't have? They don't have drive. They don't have discipline. And they can't, you know, they just can't run that fast or push the machine as hard because they won't do it. And for a combination of, you know, psychological issues or whatever it is, but, you know, one of my prominent values is hard work and work ethic. And I just I have a disdain for laziness, something that was I've grown up with.
And do you think that can be learned as you get older? Or do you think that that's something that is so ingrained and so, you know what I mean? Like you just learned it so much from such a young age. When you get older and maybe have somebody who had kind of some lazy parents and they've saw, like, do you think at an older age it's a learned thing? Yeah. Or is
you can learn it. You can learn it.
So if there's somebody sitting there and they're like, you know what, I'm sitting here, I'm 350 pounds. I have no discipline. I have no work ethic. Like, what would you tell that person? If they actually want to acquire those things,
if they want, like there's the first choice, right? Which is like your life is literally nothing other than your choices exemplified in action, right? That's all it is. So you have the choice every second, every millisecond of every day in order to write your own story, be the person you want to be. The only thing that inhibits people is, well, okay, I'm 350 pounds and, you know, my parents were assholes. You know, they didn't teach me discipline or they didn't have good templates or whatever. Okay. You know, boo hoo, man. Like, I don't know. What are you going to do? And when I say that, it's your legs aren't blown off. You know what I mean? Like, I know a lot of guys that are dealing with a lot of obstacles right now that are physical and that are mental, and they're not restricting themselves in any capacity. And then you have guys that are 100% physically capable. The only thing that's stopping them is their lack of ability to choose. Like it's left or right, right? It's like choose left, choose right. You can choose not to eat a fucking Twinkie. You can do that. You can do that. Yeah. You can choose to go to bed earlier. You can choose to get up earlier. You can choose to, you know, hug your children more often and tell them that you fucking love them. You can choose not to eat like shit. You can choose to exercise. The one thing that will stop people from doing it is not their parents. And if you're saying that your parents did something, that's just an excuse for you to be lazy, right? Well, I wasn't a Green Beret. Dude, I know civilians that outwork my capacity, you know, 10 to 1, and they don't have that. They don't have that. You know, one of my good friends, he has a physical disability. And the dude is a fucking Goliath of a workhorse. Like one of my other friends I was just introduced to not too long ago, has Lou Gehrig's disease, and he's still working from his wheelchair. If they're talking about their parents, and if they're talking about, you know, woe is me, I didn't grow up with a logger or whatever it is, dude. So what? Like, are you going to continue to make excuses for the rest of your life and not accomplish the things that you want? Because the only person you have to blame for that is yourself.
See, one of the biggest things that I think resonated is I heard a friend of mine talk about this, and he said, one of the biggest fears that I have is that someday I'm laying in my deathbed and I'm looking back at all the things that I wanted to do, but I didn't.
Yeah. I don't have that fear.
Yeah.
Nope.
Cause you're doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done it. I would say every day, sometimes I'm a minute by minute guy, circumstantially sometimes where I'm like, you know, I think combat really helped me early on. It showed me how finite life is. Yep. In that, I'm not going to leave anything on the table, man. Yeah. I'm not going to leave anything on the table. I'm not going to be on my deathbed going, man, I really wish I would have done this thing.
Yep.
Okay. If I'm going to do this thing, I'm just going to go do it. You know, a good example of that was like, I grew up in Idaho. I grew up running rivers in, you know, high school and college in my kayak. And I loved rivers. I really, really, really wish like I could have spent more time, but unfortunately, you know, like my dad's a logger. He's not a big recreation guy. Like it was really one of those things where I love to fly fish. I love to hit rivers. And later in life, when I had the opportunity, I was like, I'm going to get into this. And in my way of getting into it was ultimately, yeah, I did, you know, buy part of the company, but then I spent an entire summer after I got back from Afghanistan. I flew home from Afghanistan where I'm running a massive project where I've got like a 23 million annual project. I've got a ton of responsibility. Like what I'm doing is like briefed at Congress and I'm like talking to the, you know, the director of the agency. And I came into my company and I worked as what we call a swamper, which is the lowest man on the totem pole, rowing boats down rivers, because I wanted to learn how to row a river, man.
Yeah.
Like, and I wanted to learn how to row really complicated rivers. And I wanted to get proficient enough to do it on my own with my family. That was my goal. I need to be able to understand how to run these things so I can load my family up on a boat. I didn't have kids, didn't have a wife, didn't even have an inkling of a wife. But I knew someday what I wanted to be able to do was load up my entire family and go down really complex, like logistically and effort. The effort required to do these things is really complex. And the amount of effort that you have to put in on the front end just to learn these things is a long iterative process that requires years of your life to accomplish. I'm a long-term goal appropriated guy. Like mm-hmm. That's what I do. I love doing it. But I started that back in like 2010. It's 2008. You know, I've had some good success with the company. I'm finally, I think, proficient enough after 8 years of like rowing and working on it to the point where I could row my kids, my family down a lot of different rivers in the United States and do it all self-supported. I don't require a guide. But that's a goal that requires years of dedication. And the ability to swallow your pride, go out, keep your mouth shut, your ears open, and focus on what you're trying to accomplish. A lot of people in this society, they just want everything now, right? They're just like, I want everything now. I want my McDonald's right now, or I want this. And if I don't get the skill, I'm going to just turn the page on myself and just move on to something else.
Yep.
That's well, so been really pathetic.
Well, it would have been really easy for you right at that point in your career with the military. I mean, you'd been, you know, in all these different like crazy places around the world from what I've read. You've, you know, been in charge of so much like you were talking about to go out there and just be like, yeah, I'm a badass. Like, just give me a boat, man. I'll take the river on. Right. But instead, like you humbled yourself and you said, so do you still actually own that company today?
I do. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
All right. Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, and so I still rode the river. Like last year, I took my wife down the river. I took my entire company went out on the river. You know, me and another guy, Neil Curry, owns a company called Ready Gunner here in Provo. He's a former Army Ranger. He was also, you know, a former river guide. And he and I rode the entire top to bottom Middle Fork with, you know, me and my buddies. And, you know, it it's such a great feeling of accomplishment when you can do stuff like that and you can share these experiences with people. And,
yeah,
you know, it would have been really easy for me to go, I can't do that. You know, I'm already set in my, I can't carve out the time. Yeah. I'm already set in my profession. I'll just pay a guide. Dude, I don't want to do that. I started archery hunting 2 years ago. I've never archery hunted in my life.
Yeah. I just started too, not long ago, but growing up around here, like I would have thought I probably would have done it before, but it's a whole different experience than rifle hunting.
Last week, I have never shot anything other than pigs with my bow. I've been shooting my bow for 2 years. I went to two total archery challenges last year. You know, I shot a whitetail, just a small, like 8-point whitetail, but I shot it 70 yards away. And wow, for a bow, for an archery guy, like that's a long shot of a whitetail.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's taken me 2 years, man. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I have targets set up in the back of the shop. First thing I started with was like, I packed a bunch of coffee bags, like those big burlap sacks, into another burlap sack. And I started shooting a traditional bow in my roaster. 2 years, my goal was to be able to be proficient enough that I could go kill an elk. But it's taken me 2 years.
Yeah. I got within about 60 yards of a bull. And again, this is my first year and I didn't even draw. Cause I was just like, not yet. Like I'm not ready yet. Cause I know, cause just like you said, it's like, I'll get there. Probably this time next year, I would feel confident, but I was just like, not yet. I couldn't get him any closer and he took off and I was bummed. But yeah, it's definitely a process to learn how to do it.
Yeah. And you got to kill a lot of stuff too. Right. Whereas I've shot a lot of stuff, like a lot of things, and I've shot a ton of stuff with rifles. I've shot, you know, pistols at a high proficiency level. But I had to kind of start over and I had to go out and shoot a bunch of animals, went hog hunting. So, you know, nobody cares about hogs in Texas. We like to just like, so I shot a lot of hogs.
And then that's something I want to do. I've seen people do that. That looks like so much fun.
Dude, it's so much fun. But I shot a lot of hogs. And my last weekend was the first time. So two whitetail down, one heart shot at 26, and one double lung at 70. And so two arrows, two horned animals. And now I'm ready. Like now I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? I'll put the pins on something bigger and I'll put the arrow where I want to put it.
Were you in a tree stand?
I had a tree stand down in Texas. Both were tree stand deer. Mm-hmm. But I shot a ton of hogs down there too. Like I shot a ton of javelina and hogs.
So, man, the time is going fast. There's so many other things. I could talk to you all day. This is awesome. So you go through all of the military training and everything, or the combat, everything else that you've done. Like, how do you end up going from there to running like a multi-million dollar coffee business? Was it, because I've kind of doing some research for the show. It sounds like it just kind of started as a hobby or a passion, right? And then just took off from there.
I've always been into coffee. And when I say always, since 1997, I've been into coffee. It's interesting. People are always like, how'd you, plan these things out? Or like, some of them aren't plans. They're just feelings, right? They're like, I know that's what I want. Like I knew that I wanted to have my own business someday. I knew that I wanted to be in coffee. My initial idea and concept was I wanted to have this like roastery range, like a big cool coffee shop with a range. And like, that's where the name Black Rifle Coffee, not only is it an homage to my service rifle, but it was like, it'd be great to have like a range. You can come in and buy a gun and then go out to the range, grab a great shot of espresso or whatever. Just combine those two things. Yeah. But I was in coffee in 97. I was really, really into it. And then I was deploying back and forth to Iraq in 2006. And I wanted to take fresh coffee with me. Started this process literally back like in 1997, like reading books and roasting coffee on my stovetop and going and trying different coffees and ordering different cream beans. And so I've been roasting coffee back and going back and forth to Iraq. So in 2014, when I was ready to transition, I was going to go into coffee. There wasn't like, I didn't know exactly how it was going to turn out. You know, that's when you're staring into the abyss going, I don't know how this is going to go, but fuck it. I'm going to try, you know? And there's no secret to it. You know, I had a mission statement for my life, which was to emancipate myself from government service and to live a happy and fulfilling life. That was it. I wrote a mission statement. So I wasn't attached to how, I was attached to the overarching objective. And people are always talking about living my best life, or I don't know, so trite and kind of like dumb. It's like, I have a vision for myself. What does that vision look like? And sometimes it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, right? And I just start putting together the small pieces and collecting the individual skill sets and the requirements to kind of build that and put it in place. So when opportunity comes, you can capture that opportunity and say, great, I'm ready for this. And it fits into my objective. I think so many people are reactionary, right? They're just like reactionary. They're just going, yeah, that sounds good. Or yes, that sounds good. Or they're letting other people kind of control what they do because of peer pressure. Like, I don't give a shit what other people do. I don't care. Like, I look at them as like, is this person a good or a bad example? You know, I look at them as like good example, bad example. But as far as like peer pressure circumstances of like what fits into normal society, don't give a shit. Like, I don't care.
Well, has that helped you too? Because I mean, like with Black Rifle Coffee Company, it's been very polarizing, right? Because I mean, God forbid if you're pro gun at this point, you're crazy. And so I'm sure that you guys have gotten a ton of hate, probably threats. I mean, anytime you have, you know, like beautiful women shooting guns as a promo, you're probably going to get a bunch of hate. So I mean, has that helped you with that? Because because obviously, like it's been huge. Like your guys' videos are the best marketing videos I think I've ever seen. Like seriously, and I worked for $100 million a year plus software company within the internet marketing space, and I'm like, this is what everybody's trying to do, and you guys are crushing it with these videos. But along with that comes tons and tons of hate. Like I know it.
Yeah.
But is that what you say? I don't give a shit what people think about me. I mean, is that kind of part of it or?
Yeah, it's going back to that whole thing of you have to do what you want to do. You have to do the things that ignite your passion, and you really have to just say, "Screw it!" Like I'm not going to listen to the you know the cheap seats. Like who cares? I don't care. Like I listen. You know, like it's funny. I was having this conversation about Sean Hannity the other day because people are like, I can't believe you guys work with Sean. I'm like, I listen to Sean. I like Sean. I like him as a person. He's super fun. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. So like, I legitimately like him. So do I like everything that he puts out? No, that's just human nature, man. Like, but you know, I've also been able to sponsor like guys like Rogan and guys like Sean or guys like Crowder, and they're like super polarizing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that's the thing with society is if you start listening to people too much, you know, everybody's going to tell you you can't do it. Everybody's going to tell you, like, everybody in the world is going to give you all the negative feedback you ever wanted. Like, you can't do this. You can't do that. You can't do this. You can't do that. And if you listen to those people, you won't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. That's just human nature. They like to tell people, and what I say is, like, misery loves company. Right? Miserable people like to make other miserable, like to make people miserable. Don't listen to it. You know, just be, it sounds like, you know, like college freshman type, you know, like intellect, but it's like, be who you want to be. It's like, no, man, like you really have to kind of have that vision for who you want to be. And you have to pursue that relentlessly. Like just pursue it relentlessly and don't listen to the people that are going to tell you no, because they're going to outnumber the people that are going to tell you you can do that 10 to 1. And the hate, so? Like, so what? the people that hate on my company are the same people that can't, they can't take 20 people from their company down the Middle Fork and, you know, row a boat. And, you know, they can't shoot a buck at 70 yards. They can't manage a company of 202 people across three states with, you know, over 15 acres and 5.5 million coffee pounds roasted. They can't do any. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's, you have to be kind of a prick. You have to be just kind of an arrogant prick and say, you can't do what I do. So why the hell am I going to listen to you?
I love it. So I know I got to wrap it up. I know we're running out of time here, but there's sure, a couple of things that I definitely would feel really, really dumb if I didn't ask you, or I feel like we'd miss out. Cause I read somewhere that you're a prankster. Is that right? So I got to ask, when you were deployed, what was the best prank you can think of?
Oh man, I've done some really good ones. I found some water skis and a life jacket in a shipping container one day, and I pulled that out and I started wearing it around in Iraq, and I threw the skis in the back of my truck on this compound, and I went out and I was picking up some Delta Force guys, and they were like Command Sergeant Major and a commander. It said gay meter on it, and it was pegged out, and it was like in rainbow colors, and I had a fake mustache on, and like I was just picking these guys up, and I had water skis in the back, and the Delta Force Sergeant Major was like, what the fuck, you know, kind of a thing. He's like, what is that? Is that gay meter like telling me that you're gay? And I'm like, oh no, man, that's taking a reading off you. And this thing's pegged out. And he was like, holy crap, I can't believe this dude, you know? And I was like, hey guys, just going to hit the lake a little later. You guys up to do some water skiing? And they're like, there's a water skiing place? And I'm like, no, you guys, this is at Rack, dude. There's no place to water ski. Like, well, you guys don't do map recons at Delta Force? And, you know, did stuff like that. I did like a lot of things like that, where it was one of those things where I think that, you know, humor is one of those things that you really, I'm a fairly serious character when I need to be, but there's no reason not to just really try to have as much fun as you can. And you can still have fun in places like Iraq or Afghanistan or in any serious endeavor. It's like, it's one of the reasons why I don't like bankers, is they take themselves way too serious. It's like, you manage money, dude. Like, you're not saving lives. Like, yeah, chill out. Like, what the fuck is your problem? And I think that kind of goes back to that whole life ethos of, like, I think combat really helped me in a lot of ways. Like, it helped me so much, is because life can be like gone. It's just like, turn the switches off, you're done. And if you're not the person you want to be, and you know that there's that person underneath where you're like, I'm pining to be that guy, you just have to make the change. Just flip it. Be like, great, I'm that guy now. Who cares? What's the worst thing that can happen, man? Like, the worst thing that can happen, what are they going to do? Take your birthday away? Like, nothing's going to happen. Like, so for me, like, pranking people is just about, you know, humor, providing laughter, a little bit of relief. You know, it's entertaining and it's interesting, right? It's like setting it up.
What about for your company with some of the videos and stuff? I assume you guys probably have to take shots at each other, prank each other while you're doing some of your, whether it be the videos or like around the office or stuff like that. Like, what do you got? What's your best one that you have as far as that's concerned?
You know, we haven't really pranked each other a lot. Like, myself, Matt, and Jared, we laugh all the time. And we tell jokes. Like, we're very much into this. Like, when we get into a creative space, we laugh so hard, and it kind of reminds me of when you're a kid and you're sitting around with all your buddies and you go into like imaginary land where you're like playing G.I. Joes and you can imagine what's happening, and you guys are having like the purest fun as a kid, right? Because it's like you're in imaginary land, right? And myself, Matt, Jared, and Logan, we spend a lot of time over in imagination land trying to think and make each other laugh a lot, because we're trying to figure out like what will provide value, what will be funny, what will people think is funny. If we think it's funny and we make each other laugh doing it, we gotta film it. That's when we're like, we gotta film this. Let's go. And then we fire up the cameras and we get it done. And that's kind of our obligation to the community, is let's create amazing content that makes us laugh, because now we're all laughing together, right? And that's one of the reasons why I love humor, is because it's something you can collectively accomplish, right? It's not, if you don't find it funny, chances are it's not going to cause a lot of hate either. Like, it's just positive energy, right? It's just like creating positive energy and then pushing that into the community and then having a collective laugh. Great. Now we've done something positive for everybody. And if we're focused on doing positive things, we're always in a positive headspace too, versus a negative headspace. And that's why we love doing humor too. Like, this is just a side note, I guess.
Yeah, no, totally agree. So just, I guess, kind of two last questions. Is your, because I know we've talked a lot about him and a lot about kind of your upbringing, yeah, and stuff. Is your dad still around?
Yeah, he works for me.
Does he really?
Yeah,
because that's what I was going to ask. He does what?
He runs my facilities.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So like, what did he think when you're like, hey, Dad, I think I'm going to get into coffee, you know, being like probably a rough and tough logger. Was he like coffee, or was he like, that's awesome, like, go for it?
My dad just learned early on, I'm a weird guy. Like, he just, he learned how to cope with me like really, really, really early on. I think once I donned a green beret, my dad kind of said, I'm just going to stop questioning, you know. And then he didn't know that I worked for the agency. He just knew like I was in combat zones the majority of my adult life. And I'd done a bunch of other stuff. You know, I'd climbed mountains and run rivers and, you know, run marathons. And I would go out and run 40 or 50 miles at like 100 degrees and just with no water and like do weird things, where my dad's just like, I'm just going to stop even weighing in on anything he does, because it doesn't matter anyway. My dad would say, well, I think that's stupid. Very rarely did he say that, I think that's stupid. Probably after the age of 21, my dad never really said that's stupid. He'd just go, what are you going to do? Okay, great. All right. Well, I guess that's what you're going to do now. So I got to be behind you and support you, or get the fuck out of your way, or, you know, just not really understand it. Most of the, he doesn't really question anything anymore. He hasn't questioned anything since I was probably 22, I would say. Mm-hmm. Once I got home from Iraq, I think, he looked at me completely different. He looked at me completely differently. Yeah. You know, like, he's like, okay, well, he's not only a man, but he's a man that has done some pretty crazy shit. You know? So my dad is a guy that respects hard work. He respects work ethic. He respects all these things. And then when your son's a Green Beret and he goes off to combat and he comes back, you tend to kind of have a different layer of communication with a parent after that. You know, it's not the same. Like, I can't tell him how to do logging. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't even pretend to, but
I would imagine that, kind of like you said, when, even if he doesn't know everything that happened over there, there's got to be an enormous level of respect that he has, and he's got to be proud of you, right? For going over there and doing that.
He's really proud. Yeah,
that's
awesome.
He's
really proud. He's really proud, and he's kind of, I think he's just kind of taken back. Like, a lot of people, you know, they think, you got a lot of guys out there, like, they're just talking heads, right? And they go out and they talk about all their hard work, and they talk about, you know, all their accomplishments, and they just kind of wear those out front all the time. I think that there's a certain amount of insecurity that goes into that. Like, they need to show people how fucking hard they work and talk about it all the goddamn time. And that's their shtick, right?
Yeah.
For me, I've never really looked at anything like I'm not better for any of it. Like, I'm not a better person for accomplishing any of it. I'm not better than anybody in the mountains of Idaho or anybody working in a, you know, mechanic shop. I just chose a different life, right? It's just like, I just chose a different life, and I'm not going to go out and tell people how much fucking better I am than they are, or how to do something, unless they're like, oh, hey, I want to, how do you do this? I'm like, oh, I'll try to sort it out. I'll try to help you. But, you know, he is proud. I'm not that, like, I'm not that arrogant about it, I guess. I don't know. I just live my life. I'm the same dude that he's known for all my life. The same kid that used to cause a bunch of trouble for him. You know what I mean? I just went out and did a bunch of weird shit that I thought was cool. And I didn't do it because I had to prove something to my peers. I did it because I was interested in it. And I think it's fun. I think it's interesting. And I think it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So last question, get you out of here.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of, again, like coming back to the reason why I started the podcast and the people why, you know, I try to get on here, I do, is because, you know, kind of looking down the road you know, trying to figure out like what my own legacy, what I wanted that to be, right? Like that was a big part of what drove me into this and everything else. So I guess for you, having done all the crazy shit you've done, you know, I know you've been in some of the, probably the deepest, darkest places in the world, you know, around some bad people, around some amazing people. You're out there, you know, building a business, and I know it's getting ready to explode even more. So I guess after having gone through all of this stuff and growing up the way you did and living how you do now, like, what do you want, whenever that day comes, like down the road, like, what do you want your legacy to be?
Number one priority is, you know, what are my kids going to think about me? Right. So what do I want them to think about me? I think that's my first and foremost. It's what are my kids and family think of me? And, number one is, I need them and want them to know, like, I love them, and that I'm a good person, right? So I love them, I supported them, and I set them up for success in life, which is, my dad really trained me to be a good person. Like, he gave me a good work ethic, and he provided a template that I could utilize not only for my life, but if they decide to have children, for my children's life, and I can carry on the legacy through generations of my own DNA. That's not just my DNA, right? It's what you teach people. And then past that, I think from, you know, my business now, is that, are the people that are in my business, do they think that I'm a, you know, a good business owner? Was I good to them? Was I, you know, a good manager? Was I a good CEO? Was I good to them? I think then my subculture, right? So my peer group, my post 9/11 veteran community, you know, was I a leader? Was I a positive inspiration? Did I provide proper amount of opportunity within my own individual success? Have I carried that on? Past that, I don't care. Yeah, it's the only people I really care about influencing are my family, my business, and my peers. And after that, you know what? If people think what I'm doing is great, if they think what I do is good, if they think what I do is ethical, okay, cool. But I don't care about impressing them. I don't care about what my legacy means to them. I owe everything to the people that ultimately are my children, my family, my employees, and my veteran subculture. Past that, I don't have any energy to do it. You know, there are a lot of guys that want to be like Winston Churchill or, I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm just Teddy Roosevelt, or carry on some weird legacy outside of that. I think if you try to boil the ocean when it comes to that, it becomes too complex, and you have to listen to too many voices, right? So, those are my priorities, and that's how I think about them, very sequentially. And that's all I really have the energy or the direction to do. You know, like, I'm a pretty simple person. I like the mountains. I like solitude, living in the mountains, you know, reading really fucking good books. I can be a positive energy in the world, and that's about it. Like, really, I'm fairly simple. Everything else out here, as far as, like, you know, list of so-called accomplishments. It's just icing on the cake. And ultimately it's just things that I can exercise my intellect and physicality to that I'm not bored, you know. It's interesting to me. I do it. So that's pretty much I would say the capstone to it.
Perfect. You seem like a good dude. I'm so, like I said, I'm so thankful, Evan, that you took the time. It's so cool to see your daughter running around there while we're doing this and being able to have that experience as well. And like I said, I'm just super grateful that you hopped on here. You gave everybody a ton of value, a ton of things that I know have kind of helped form you. And I know that you also went through some stuff that people could actually look at, listen to, and be able to implement. So once again, my brother, I appreciate you hopping on here.
Dude, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There is one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.